or street repairs or some other factor, suddenly they're having to spend that money on spill response. And we have local towns in the spill area that are in some trouble because of it. And the mayors of those communities, of course, are not happy at the situation they're in. They've been working with Exxon. They've not been able to strike an agreement with Exxon. But those are the kinds of things that I think are still outstanding questions and a very important part of this. The other thing that I wanted to mention that Mr. Young raised is the efficiency of certain operations. Making a determination that a shoreline segment needs to be treated is not necessarily the same as making the choices about how equipment and personnel are going to be deployed. Our view has been that you need to tailor that very carefully to the actual conditions that you have there. And it may not make sense to have 300 people in Northwest Bay with water washing, extensive water washing equipment, if you can do the same job or a better job using lower tech methods, people on the shoreline with some specific manual tools that can do the job, or using alternative methods. And one of our problems, and we've been talking about this with Exxon, but one of the things we've encouraged Exxon and haven't really seen a full response yet is to try some of the alternatives that are available. Local folks, fishermen in Homer, for example, designed a rock washing machine. That machine probably needs a little work to make it as effective as possible, but it's the kind of thing that ought to be tried. People in Kodiak have talked to me about putting together seines using geotextile fabric to seine up the moose or the tarballs in order to keep it from going on the shoreline. They'd like to have Exxon work with them to get that going. Those are the kinds of lower tech, lower intensity efforts that show some promise, and we ought to be using as many of those alternatives as possible rather than just the highly intensive efforts that we've seen that are so prominent, like the washing techniques and the large crews on large vessels.
Mr. Stevens, with Chairman Miller and others, I had the opportunity of visiting Prince William Sound and meeting with you in Valdez for earlier hearings in May. And then I went back last week on a kind of a private trip on behalf of the subcommittee as a follow-up, and had a very interesting experience as I prowled through Prince William Sound for a couple of days with a couple of fishermen on their boats and a number of local people who understand and know the area quite well. I was intrigued, therefore, and a little surprised to hear you so strongly reiterate, as you do in your opening statement, quote, "We intend to more than achieve by mid-September the objectives set out in the federally approved cleanup plan of May 24th. Now, I can't find anybody here who's got a copy of that plan, but I wonder if you could summarize for us what that plan provided and then tell us how much of that cleanup plan has been achieved to July 29th.
Congressman, I don't have a copy of the plan either, but I have, I think, the relevant figure that you're looking for. At the time that plan was put together, we were dealing with an impacted mileage which was based on definitive surveys in Prince William Sound and an estimate in the Gulf of Alaska areas of 364 miles. That's what the May 1st and then the May 24th update were based on. Now, at about the time that plan, well, at the time that plan was printed, if you will, there were estimates, and these were based on data that ADEC had provided, with a substantial increase in the impacted mileage in the Gulf of Alaska area, such that the total impacted mileage in current use at that point was about 725 miles. If I could see this chart, then this chart shows, it uses 730 miles, not 725, but that's the same figure, shows the progress to date in terms of miles by dates through July 23rd. The dark color is Prince William Sound, in case you can't read it. I can't. And the light portion of the bar is the Gulf of Alaska treated areas. Now, the comment in my statement was in respect of the 364-mile figure in the plan, and what we are directed toward getting the job done is the 730.
Did the cleanup plan say that those, at that time it was 364, later revised to 725?
The 725-30 figure was not in the plan, no, sir, but that was the subject of discussions between
our folks.
And you
later, in essence, incorporated in the plan. What did the plan provide in terms of qualitative action? What was to be achieved? Was it to
be... It provided milestone targets, as my opening comment indicated, against the 364, though, not against the 730.
But what was the target?
Target
in terms
of...
How did you define what your goal was?
In terms of miles versus calendar dates.
Well, now what are we going to do to those 364 miles?
Complete treatment of those miles by August the 20th was the agreement. And again, the reason it was August 20th, not September 15th, was everyone was recognizing that the mileage figure was larger than that. And as a consequence, we had to bring additional equipment, people, resources to bear in order to give us a reasonable degree of confidence,
and
in order to give Admiral Robbins and Admiral Yost a reasonable degree of confidence
and
that we could make this plan by September 15th.
And you consider that you're on target?
We've been making excellent progress in the last couple of weeks, and let me say the reason for that, and one of the reasons that we have been slightly behind through the early July period is, as I commented earlier to the chairman, we have been in an intensive period of buildup in terms of equipment, and that's been the limiting factor, as well as people. And our current productivity is almost two times what it was in the early part of late June, early July. And so we think, yes, we're on target, possibly slightly behind, but...
And so how many miles have you completed?
Well, this chart would say in Prince William Sound that we've treated in Prince William Sound, the dark part of the bar, about 132 miles of the 209. Now, let me say, make it more complicated, that since these data were put together and contained in my supplemental statement, we have completed a much more definitive survey in Prince William Sound. And the figure that again, is in current use between the Coast Guard and ourselves, for Prince William Sound is not 209 miles, but rather 345 miles, which sounds like a vast increase in the magnitude of the task. But most of the change between 209 and 345, about 75% to 80% of the change, is in the lightly impacted shoreline as opposed to the heavier model.
We have to go to a vote, but before we go, I would like to point out that last week I visited Little Smith Island, and I brought back with me two rocks that are so filthy, swimming in oil, that I dare not undo the bag that I brought them back in, but they look worse having been treated twice. And I suppose are in your list of areas now cleaned or treated, as you define them, at least completed. And I'm telling you, it is no better than it was when we visited it the 10th of May, I think it was, with a committee. And I invite your having a look at these. These rocks are consistent with federal law, borrowed and will be washed and returned. But I think would be interesting for you to comment on when we come back. I think we have to leave for a vote right now.
In the testimony in the Senate last week, Stevens, you talked about that 500 miles of shoreline had been treated, and in this for today, you say some 600 miles has been treated. You mentioned you're accelerating, so you did 100 miles of treated beach in the last week.
Well, notice the jump in the bar about the 21st or so of the Prince William Sound portion of the bar, about the 20th or so of July. There was an adjustment made to reconcile between the Coast Guard county and our county of about 20 miles there. So that represents an adjustment to get the counting of treated shoreline consistent with the 345-mile estimate. But absent that, yes, we have made substantial progress. And understand that progress comes in two ways, Mr. Chairman. One, progress comes in two ways. One is by Coast Guard approving our moving off of a segment of beach and moving on, if you will, the process of sign-off, and then secondly, by what's physically happening. And so sometimes the bookkeeping, and this, if you will, is a measure of the bookkeeping, lags and catches up in spurts as contrasted to what's actually happening on the work.
What percentage of these beaches that have been treated have been re-oiled?
It's difficult to say. I don't have an estimate. I will say that there were probably half a dozen to eight, and Congressman Owens' comment about Smith Island is one of those. There have been a number of areas where we did not treat but a small portion of the shoreline on an island, or we moved on before treatment was completed because of priorities that were set by the Shoreline Advisory Committee. Like, we had to move off of Smith before we had treated much, if any, of that major stretch of beach because of the pinniped pupping period, seal pupping period. We've moved off of other beaches before treatment was complete because of opening of fishing seasons and so on.
Do you know what percentage of the beach has been re-oiled?
We don't have a percentage figure, although I may be able to get that for you. It is a significant level of re-oiling because in areas that were heavily oiled initially, that was a priority to get at least the gross contamination off of there. So some of the very sensitive areas which were treated early on have been re-oiled. Not all. Certainly, but a significant number have been re-hit.
Could I comment, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
There's two types of re-oiling, and it would be, I think, misleading to think of re-oiling in the main as occurring as the photograph that Mr. Kelso showed earlier. In the Gulf of Alaska area, which is the bulk of the mileage shown there, the re-oiling, well, first, the oiling on a virgin impacted beach can range all the way from very small portions that are heavily impacted with moose in the intertidal zone looking just like oil did originally in Prince William Sound in terms of its impact. Very small amount of the Gulf of Alaska is impacted like that, but vast stretches of beach, miles, where there might be a few moose patties, teacup, dime size, maybe five of those in a 50-yard stretch or that sort of thing. One thing we've been doing in the Gulf of Alaska with that type of re-oiling, Kodiak area, primarily Kodiak in the Shelikof Strait area, is there's been a lot of activity going back and re-cleaning re-oiled beaches, re-impacted beaches, and that's not counted there. So as Mr. Kelso commented, we have been taking care of some of the re-oiling as it has gone on. And again, I'm assured there's no double counting occurring.
I'm sure we'll be counting beaches for some time. I'd like to get back to the crux of this hearing, and if I might, if we might put up the chart, the decision chart that Exxon had up earlier. Now, and this committee's discussions with Admiral Robbins, both during the hearing and informally, the representation was made to us, and it appears to be consistent with this chart, that at the end of this process is the Coast Guard's obligation either to sign off on various proposals or not to sign off on. One early in contention was whether or not the workforce should be substantially increased, and that decision was made, and the plan was submitted, I believe, by Exxon, and the Admiral signed off on it. Apparently, there are now discussions that are going on about what will or will not take place over the winter. I assume, am I correct, that that will also have to be signed off on the Coast Guard, or can Exxon demobilize and leave with the Coast Guard in disagreement with that?
As with everything else, Exxon can do whatever it wants.
The issue is whether we find what they are going to do to be acceptable. If
right.
we don't find it acceptable, we have the option of doing it ourselves.
You could, in fact, if you decided that there were a number of activities that should be carried on over the winter, Exxon disagreed with you, refused to do them, you could go ahead, initiate those activities, and then through this process under the legislation or under the law, submit to them a bill for those activities.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And no one's suggesting that that's Exxon's intent at this point. I'm just trying to go through this so we're clear, because there, I think, is a problem here, and I'll point that out later. Now we come back in the over the winter. I assume that Exxon has suggested that there will be surveys, both I guess on-site aerial surveys, trying to put together not only a status situation, but also what I assume would be the plan of attack in the spring. That you're going to have to look and see: are you going to mobilize these large Navy vessels again? Are you going to bring in thousands of people? Are you going to be more site-specific and what have you? And that will go through this process also. Mr. Kelso will be involved in the various federal agencies and interagency shoreline advisory. All this structure will remain in place for those decision-making. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Unless there's some reason for changing it. But I certainly expect it will, yes.
Well, the reason I raise this question, and I'm still concerned, and I'm sorry if I seem to be driving this beyond the point of reason, but I think it's sort of, this is the day when we decide what the commitments are. And this was discussed with Admiral Yost in the Senate hearings last week, and with Mr. Stevens in the Senate hearings last week. And the constant answer, as I pointed out earlier to Senator Kerry over 9 times, was, well, we'll make some of these decisions in consultation with the Coast Guard, which at the end of that questioning led Senator Stevens to say, Mr. Stevens, you keep saying you will make the judgments as to whether or not the work is to be done. And then he went on, he says, I share the chairman's frustration because he'd walked on Barrent Island and described a beach, and you said, if that's the case, we will be back. The question that I have goes to this. All of the consultation under this chart is designed, and under this organizational structure, is designed to take place prior to the last decision, and that is the federal on-scene coordinator must make a decision whether he approves a plan or disapproves a plan. And again, that goes to the winter operations and to redeployment or what is necessary in the spring. My concern is this, that we be very clear that at that point the consultations have stopped. Mm-hmm. That the Coast Guard will have made up its mind after what now may appear to be months of consultation with Exxon, with Mr. Kelso's department, with EPA, with everybody that is involved in this chart. But at that point, a decision must be made. And the question for me is Mr. Stevens, is whether or not when that decision is made, you're going to comply with it.
Based on our experience today, I have no reason to believe we will not.
So I understand, based upon your experience, you've done a yeoman's task here in terms of trying to get this thing cleaned up. But the question is that what you're going to do? Not based upon your experience. I'm asking you to look ahead now, and I'm asking you to tell us if the Coast Guard arrives at this final sign-off decision, that this is the plan that they must be implemented, is it our expectation, and do you expect to comply with that? Because we got back into whether reasonable men could disagree. I assume reasonable men will disagree up the chart a little further.
Pardon me.
No, go ahead.
Well, I would hope that there are reasonable men and women all through the chart. I think there are. But I think the only basis I have to speculate about the future is the experience of the past, and the sort of question you're posing is hypothetical. I mean, I have, you know, you and I have had no discussion about what the conditions or the situation might be and what the decision that the Coast Guard reaches might be. As Admiral Lusk has pointed out, from a legal standpoint, we have certain rights under the law. That in no way should be misinterpreted as being any intention on our part to abrogate our responsibility to do what is right and reasonable.
It's that interpretation that I'm trying to move away from. It's exactly that interpretation that I
go back. All I have to speculate about the future is the way it has worked in the past. And I feel we will reach decisions that will be satisfactory to us.
Now, if you read Admiral Yost's testimony in the Senate and the discussions of cleanup and treatment, and obviously these terms have changed over time, and that's to be expected, I guess, because I assume in good faith everybody, I won't say everybody, but many parties to this operation were more optimistic in May than they are today, including Admiral Robbins and Admiral Yost, as he says, that he was more optimistic then. But he also suggests that we do not know whether we are talking in 2 years or whether we're talking about 12 years, but treat means to remove all of the oil that man can remove this summer with the application of what we have available before the 15th of September, and then wait and see what it looks like next year. And if more is needed, the same could happen next year. And as long as it takes to stabilize the beaches and to treat it to the extent that they can be treated effectively and economically. So this process may be repeated a number of springs and summers and winters and falls. And I think that was clearly the representation to the committee in May, and I think also the representation of Exxon, because I challenged the notion that at some point you, your stockholders, somebody's going to get real tired of this operation. This does not look like this is going to lend itself to a quick and easy fix. But I assume that your commitment today is the same as it was then, is the same as it is in the pamphlet, and that is you're here until the job gets done.
Congressman, I'm sure we're going to have ongoing scientific investigations and studies for some time, and those will be directed toward determining, given a basis for decisions as to what actions should be taken.
And I also assume that the job being done is an action that is described by the Coast Guard and not by Exxon.
Well, I think the words I used in my testimony, decision taken by the Coast Guard with the involvement of Exxon.
Well, the structure that you pointed out, which was here to point out everybody else that it involved, also in at least in two places suggests the strong involvement of Exxon.
Yes.
So, let me ask you again. I assume that when the chairman of the board says that we want to know what we will not be satisfied until the cleanup is complete. Under the law and under the structure that has been working is a determination to be made by, I guess, Admiral Robbins if he's still in place at that time.
And that's what I've said earlier.
That's what you expect to comply with.
I have no basis based on our experience today to expect we will not. No, sir. But again, I can't speculate about the future, not
I understand
knowing anything
that.
About
and,
it.
But the point I'm trying to make is it was clearly left in the senator's mind, if you want to read the testimony. And it was clearly left. I met with Senator Kerry right after the hearing. It was still clear in his mind at that point that this question of whether Exxon was going to accept the judgment of the Coast Guard, not whether you had the rights and the structure is set up so that you can argue prior to that judgment your scientific evidence versus Mr. Kelso's or NOAA's or EPA's or the Coast Guard. All of that is designed in this chart, as I understand it, in the organizational structure. You clearly have your rights. But the question to be resolved is when the arguing stops and the federal on-site coordinator says, in my best determination, after weighing all of the evidence, this is the plan I want carried out. whether or not Exxon will comply with that. And you're telling me it's your expectation, and it should be my expectation, and the expectation of the Congress, that based upon your past activities, that you will, in fact, comply with that order.
And our past activities, the sort of give and take in the decisions that we've had to reach, actions we've had to take as a result of direction of the Coast Guard, give me no basis to feel there'll be a difference in the future. Again, I cannot speculate on circumstances unknown. But I can make, again,
but
use your
not
word,
the process,
expectation.
Does not the process, again, in the organizational structure designed for this bill, take into account conditions unknown?
Well,
because that's what all of this is about, is to make
Mr. Chairman,
your assessments.
I think
over
your
the
question
winter.
Goes beyond the organization chart and gets into the statutes under which the cleanup is being done. Let me just say, and possibly this responds to your question generally, my opening comment, we'll return to reinspect to ensure that the job has been properly done, and if not, to put it right.
But again, I mean, this is, you know, Senator Stevens and I don't agree on a lot of things. The suggestion in that statement is that you, Exxon, will return to make a determination. That's not what this says. This says that the federal on-scene coordinator will make that determination. There's a world of difference between those two.
And
you
if,
may not want to comply with it, and
that's
Vice
the trouble
Admiral
I'm
Lusk
having.
Has said, that's your right, and we will go to court and try to send you the bill.
That's not our
that's
expectation.
Not your intent.
That's not our expectation.
I understand.
But I cannot sit here. I think I would be ill-advised or possibly naive if I were to cede that right. I think you would accept
that. It
seems
you're not naive. Come on now. You've said that in every hearing about your being naive. You've been in this for 4 months now. If you were naive in the beginning, I'm sure that this battle has taken that out of you.
I'm learning fast, Mr. Chairman.
But do you understand, do you understand the difference? Because we went over it in May. Obviously, the Harrison memo turned it upside down in terms of perceptions. You say that's not the fact. It was clearly the perception. It was how it was received in the public and everybody else that looked at the memo. And that is, when you say you will return to make this determination, or you read the statement of the chairman of the board that that's going to be the case, try to be polite. That's not your determination to make under the law.
Understand that.
Your decision to comply or not is yours to make under the law.
Understand that. Okay. Right.
Because that's.
I think you've isolated the issue that we were circling around.
Thank you. Mr. Owens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Stevens, I can't believe that you can consider this complete, treated, cleaned, or whatever. It is, they're still swimming in oil. Is that typical, do you think, of those
Congressman,
300, 400 feet?
I was on Smith Island.
This is Little Smith.
Yes, I understand, but it's right offset of That's Smith. Right. At the Little Smith end of Smith Island Saturday a week ago, must be now almost 13
actually,
days.
Actually, they
or
told
so.
Me that we'd overlapped.
Oh, is that correct?
Right.
That was a miserable Saturday. We just barely got around because of the weather. And we overflew Little Smith about four times. And there were three areas on Little Smith that were designated as seal pupping areas that we cleaned very intensively and moved off of ahead of the seals. As I commented, I think after you left the room earlier, the bulk of Smith Island was not treated. My figure says 97% of Smith Island was not treated, again, because we had to move off because of pinniped pupping at each end of Smith, Little Smith and one end of Smith. And so it's not surprising that we do have significant re-oiling in the Little Smith area. Does that say that is satisfactorily treated? Well, you know, I can't see the rocks through the material, but I'll take your word for it. No, those aren't satisfactorily
treated.
Well,
that wasn't, obviously.
But again, the problem we have this season is, do we make a first pass treatment to try to render the impacted shoreline environmentally stable and then move on in order to get around all of it? Or do we keep coming back to the same small areas? And again, I granted earlier, and there's no question, that there are areas where the oil is deep in the substrate. By deep, maybe that's 6 inches or a foot, and it leaches out slowly. And we can stay there, some of those areas probably stay there a month. Now, it's totally useless because you're not making much progress.
And I understand the complexity of the situation a little bit, having been there on two different occasions. But I am troubled by the fact that you call complete areas that are obviously not clean at all. And trying to get from you some standard of what you consider complete that is understandable in layman's terms.
Well, complete means that we have gone on, made the appropriate treatment, different methods, and that the Coast Guard and we have agreed to demobilize off of that area. That is complete as we're using the term. That doesn't, and the intention, again, is to render, those shorelines environmentally stable. Again, no conflict with the other use. There is re-oiling occurring on some of those. But even in the case where re-oiling is not occurring, the word complete, and I think I'm right, Admiral Rusk can check me, doesn't mean that those areas won't be re-inspected and looked at for additional work.
So of the 725-mile goal, you think that you have now completed 400, your work on 400?
The plan was based on the 725, 730
right.
miles, yes.
Right.
I did say, though, that the Prince William Sound number was now 345.
Right, right.
That's not in the plan, if you will, but we had moved additional resources to get through with the plan numbers prior to September 15th, and it's our intention to treat the 345.
But of the 725, how much has been treated? What is the total?
About 600 is on that figure, isn't it? Let me make one comment.
The
mileage estimates in the Gulf of Alaska area are still subject to change. That's not a definitive survey, just like I commented about the survey following the 209 miles in Prince William Sound. And whether or not the Gulf of Alaska area is treated as consistent with the increment that is shown there for the Gulf of Alaska, I don't think at this point any of us know. There's additional work still underway to try to better define the impacted areas in the Gulf of Alaska. That work's going on very intensively currently between ourselves and the Coast Guard. I should add, it's been going on for a number of weeks. It's a very difficult problem.
Yeah. Commissioner Kelso?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Owens. All these numbers are really baffling to me because
they are, for all practical purposes, made up. And here's what I mean. We're talking about the May figures as if they are the reality. Well, hundreds of miles of shoreline have been hit to one degree or another since May, mostly outside of Prince William Sound. If we lock into the May figures as if that describes what the endpoint should be, we miss the target entirely. I'm glad to see that Mr. Stevens recognizes that the treatment is for initial treatment only, and that implies that additional work is going to be needed, which to me suggests that there needs to be a commitment for next spring for obvious reasons, because we're just, even if we meet the objective that Admiral Yost and Admiral Robbins identified.
And do you think that Mr. Stevens has made an adequate commitment today on that point?
No, I think he said he'll reserve judgment. I think that perhaps that's an academic or a legalistic distinction. Perhaps the lawyers are saying don't commit to something. But the point is, there's obviously going to need to be work done. There needs to be a commitment to do it. And let me point out some other things that have not been committed to.
Before you move on,
sure.
Commissioner, Can you give him a better answer that's more satisfying to the state of Alaska, Mr. Stevens?
Let me say that we've not locked into any numbers, and I would thank my discussion of 345 versus 209, my discussion of the work underway to try to get a better assessment in the Gulf of Alaska area, and the fact that today we have over double the resources being employed in the Gulf of Alaska area that we had in our plan, all reflect that we're working the problem as we recognize it, as we see the needs, and as things change. We're not locked into anything.
Well, that's Commissioner Kelso would like to lock you into a statement that you'll be back in the spring to do what needs doing in
the
spring.
I think Congressman Young asked me that question earlier, and I gave him a one-word answer. He said, will you be back in the spring? I said, yes.
Maybe if you would say to Commissioner Kelso that you will do what is needed in the spring, that would maybe perhaps satisfy.
I'm not going to say that to Mr. Kelso. My responsibility is to the federal on-scene commander.
Well, what is needed is, of course, in the eye, I guess, of the judge, and your judge, obviously, of what you will do voluntarily, at least.
Well, here again,
you come back and do what Exxon feels is needed in the spring.
Well, the chairman and I had quite a discussion on that while you were out of the room, Congressman. Clearly, the Coast Guard, federal on-scene commander acting under the National Contingency Plan, makes these decisions. Based on our past experience, I have no reason to feel that there will be differences of view between ourselves and the Coast Guard as to what needs to be done next spring.
Has the statement of the Admiral satisfactory to the state of Alaska, Commissioner, on what he will ask Exxon to do next spring?
We have a good relationship with Admiral Robbins, and we will continue to work through the federal on-scene coordinator. State law applies here. These are state lands, and the standards for achieving removal will continue to apply. Obviously, Exxon does not want to agree that they will do the work that the state indicates is necessary. We think that is a major gap between what Exxon says it is willing to do and what their commitment ought to be. But we will work through the on-scene coordinator, and although I don't want to recreate the colloquy here, I still heard Mr. Stevens say to the chairman that based on past experience, yes, they probably would, but the option is still open to say no. As far as I can tell, that's the answer. Now, that's closer than what we had been hearing from the memo and from Mr. Stevens' testimony before the Senate, but it's still not exactly a bomb-proof commitment, in my view.
I don't want to recreate what has already been done, but Admiral Lusk, have you commented on this issue about what you think the ground rules will be next spring?
Well, I've probably touched upon it a few times, but as I understand it, sir, we'll have the survey done. We'll have no doubt great discussions in the organization chart that we've just seen, particularly among our scientific advisors who don't always seem to be able to agree on things, regarding what is appropriate to be done. I don't think we'll ever see it immaculately clean and restored to the pristine condition it was before it happened. I think we'll probably find that some things the scientific community, the environmentalists and the like, will suggest shouldn't be cleaned, because if they are, it'll probably cause more environmental damage than what's left. But I think that when they resolve all of those things, we'll have Admiral Robbins or whoever's the federal on-scene coordinator at the time make a decision. And from our point of view, we certainly hope that Exxon sees fit to fund that and do that. If they don't, well, then we will. So I'm not
and I would think
to
that Congress would be helpful to you in trying to get them to pay for it.
I would hope so.
But Congressman,
let me say, Mr. Stevens, that I think, as I said to you in Valdez, that Exxon and its servant Alyeska were careless before the spill, but that's not an issue here today. But I think as soon as Exxon took over, you decided to put all the resources necessary to try to clean it up initially. And I am one who believes that much of your high-tech operation is doing more damage than good. For example, in Northwest Bay on Eleanor Island, where I visited 10 days ago, you have 400 to 500 people in 35 to 40 vessels. And I talked with your foreman there, unannounced, after having reviewed a lot of what's going on with all those high-pressure, 110-degree water hoses, and seeing all those boats plying that beautiful, pristine, previously pristine harbor, and said to him, how much oil are you collecting here, this massive operation? And the answer is 7 barrels a day of oil. And I couldn't imagine that the waste from 400 people to 500 people, and I know the state does not allow the waste directly to be thrown into the bay, and the spills, and I know those are monitored very carefully as well, don't more than offset the 7 barrels of oil that's being recovered. It's the high-tech part of what you're doing up there and the high-cost part, which is really troubling to me. In, I think it's Goldbug Harbor, just north of there, your foreman showed me how that hand implements really work much better than these big super suckers and these this big filter operation up there. He was using a hand rake with a piece of screen on it to lift oil when this super machine with 25 discs was getting nothing out of it. He was lifting it up and putting it in a bucket. And I'm convinced, quite frankly, that those operations, though well-intended, and intended as a palliative, political palliative, not only to you, Mr. President of Exxon, but to George and me, and to the Congress, who last spring said, we got to do whatever we can do, and yet it's not working. It's not getting the job done, and it's doing more damage than good. I'd like to see somebody go into Snug Harbor, where I picked up an eagle feather in a pool of 3 feet of oil, which has not yet been treated. I'd like to see a couple of people go in a shallow draft boat with 3 buckets and one of these jerry-built devices I was just talking about, and very quietly clean up those pools of oil. And I'm afraid you're going to send a multi-million dollar operation in. I'm afraid it's going to do more damage than good.
Well, Congressman, to describe most of what's being done is high-tech, probably overstates what's going on. It's a basic washing process. Warm or hot water is being used, and the equipment, by and large, is adaptations of existing equipment. There's really little technology. I would say with respect...
Another hearing. Hearing.
Yes, I understand that. But I think given the problem on... some of the heavily impacted areas in Prince William Sound, that is the most effective basic treatment mechanism. Now, there is some high tech. We've commented earlier here on bioremediation. You commented, and somebody else, I think it was Congressman Young, commented on the small amount of oil that was being freed by the washing operation on a daily basis. 7 barrels was your example. There are chemical dispersants, which experience has shown and tests have shown, are environmentally safe and sound, which can speed the cleaning process, can increase that 7-barrel figure, can move more rapidly to render the beaches environmentally stable. And we've been working very hard with all of the affected scientific and environmental community to try to get approval to use these, I call them chemical cleaning agents. This is something separate from the bioremediation. In essence, these chemicals are used in the washing process, if you will. And I'm convinced that, one, the rate of progress, the chairman asked about that earlier, as well as the effectiveness of the process can be greatly speeded and abetted by the use of those agents. We need to get on with that. We need the authorization for that, and that was the subject, Chairman, if you've read last week's hearing, of a considerable amount of discussion at that hearing. I think we have made some progress in the intervening week, and I hope that continues.
Do I have a little more time, Mr. Chairman, in my 5 minutes?
Only in Washington is there 5 minutes, but go ahead.
Let me make one other point. You know, the heart of the matter about the work which will be needed will be judged to be warranted next spring is really contained in many of your comments about more harm than good, about question the effectiveness in terms of cost benefit, impact benefit, if you will. And that's one of the reasons, Mr. Chairman, that I think to deal with a question in the abstract, I won't say would be naive, I would say would be wrong.
Well, let me, if I may, just interject there again. Let's look at the process. There is going to be a bundle of scientific evidence put down on this issue between now and next spring. It's going to come from all different sources, and people are going to argue the numbers and the methodology back and forth. The process allows for that. That's the above-line arguments that take place on the organizational structure for this oil spill cleanup. Again, Admiral Robbins, I'm sure, did not ask for this duty, but at some point, he is going to have to make a determination, weighing all of that evidence, having listened to all of the arguments, as to whether or not you want to do, he wants to go forward with the plan. And he will eventually decide what that plan is going to be, taking input from all parties involved, and probably more parties that aren't involved, but across the board. So this constant suggestion that there's room to hedge because it's hypothetical, or what the conditions may be, or what the winter brings us, and how much will be washed by Mother Nature and how much won't be, and all that is all going to be factored into this process.
Next spring.
We still come down
next spring
to the Admiral's determination that he wants to go forward with a specified plan. And the only issue is whether or not Exxon is going to comply with that or not comply with that. I understand you to tell me that it is your intention to comply with that plan.
My expectation, based on our prior experiences, that there will be no vast differences of view. Mr. Chairman,
well, that's an interesting answer. I mean, it's an interesting answer because I think you've chosen the words now five or six times, you're welcome to it. That's your answer, and that's fine. But maybe it does leave a little bit more wiggle room than I had heard the first time. And we'll let the transcript can speak for itself, and obviously, your past actions and your future actions can speak for themselves.
Well, again, I think Congressman Owens' comment was along the lines of our past action, and that would, I think, be my summary comment on that subject. And that is, I think that your expectation of what we might do in the future would best also be based on what we have done in terms of acceptance of responsibility and meeting our obligations in the past. And I would say that, as I said earlier, we have at least 675 million good reasons, as well as thousands of people, equipment, work, and I appreciate the compliment, a lot of high technology being applied that says we accept the responsibility, and as the chairman said, we're going to assure that the job has been properly done.
The $600 million, I would suggest, I would think there are many within the corporate structure, including stockholders, that would believe that you're talking about sending good money after bad. I don't say that's the outlook.
Well,
so, this isn't an investment you're getting a return on. Other than you're barely keeping your name above water, but
well, Mr. Chairman, you may have heard the president of Exxon Corporation, my immediate boss, comment last night on a news program about the shareholders' attitude toward this activity, and I think the shareholder, like many others, expect us to follow through on the obligation that the chairman has made. We're not sensing from the shareholders any desire to do other than has been stated. Could I go back to three subjects?
We've got a real problem because we got another vote again, and I'm not getting the kinds of answers that I wanted. I'm a little embarrassed if you think I've been complimenting you, because I didn't mean to compliment you except on the initial thrust that Exxon has made, and I think you made it in good faith initially. But I think it was made out of political desperation, and we all shared in that, as I suggest, even the members of Congress. But the job's not done, And I just think you're doing it the wrong way. And I hope you'll come back in the spring, and I hope that you don't bring a lot more of these big multi-million dollar barges. I hope you bring the low-tech that will sensitively treat the problem, and if there are chemical dispersants and biofertilization processes which will help, I hope that whatever this vast array of new scientific data that will be available in the spring says can be done to clean it up, because there's restoration here as well as cleanup. There's a job of putting it back the way it was, and that hasn't even begun, in my view, up there. But I do think that Exxon does have a continuing obligation, and the Congress, as far as I'm concerned, I think there's going to be a surprise legislative package, perhaps. I guess it's not going to be a surprise. George Miller is preparing a very tough piece of corrective legislation, which I expect to be supportive of, and many others as well. I think Congress will basically support to try to assure that this job is finished, and perhaps we improve the chances of not having any more. But there are two questions that I've not been able to pursue, and I don't know whether the chairman's going to have the patience to permit me to pursue them. But I want to know how much oil has been extracted up there. Of the 260,000 barrels that were spilled, what is the count for how much has been extracted, and what is the opportunity, do you think, in the future? And then I'd like to give Commissioner Kelso a chance to comment on all this.
At the hearing in Valdez, we had a brief discussion, and I think we put a paper in that indicated, let me just pick a number, about 40% of the volume that was spilled could be expected to have evaporated, naturally dispersed, or biodegraded.
Which was disputed by all the other experts,
yes,
and those on hired Exxon, of course.
I'm not trying to get back into that debate. Since then, we estimate, based on some third-party sampling and measuring and so on, that we've recovered about 68,000 barrels of the 258. So what is that? 40% of 258 is like 105, and 68, say 175,000 barrels of the 258, and the other, 85 or so is, who knows? Shorelines.
Do you find that totally credible, Commissioner?
Did I understand that the estimate was 175,000 barrels?
Well, he's counted a 40% dispersal factor, which you may want to comment on. You did earlier, as I recall. And then he's saying they've recovered 68,000 additional barrels.
Well, with your permission, I would like to come back with the specific number after I've talked to our staff, because the way you determine what you've actually recovered is to not to just look at the gross fluid, but you have to wait till it settles out, separate the oil and water and the other debris, and then gauge it to see how much you actually have. And there is a gauging operation that's available to do this and has been doing it, but I don't know the precise figure.
Congressman, if I may, the figure I quoted, the 68,000 barrels, takes account of gross to net volume, is best the experts know how.
I'm sorry, I don't understand that.
Well, Mr. Kelso was taking the 68,000 barrels as being the total amount of fluid that we've collected. Not so. That is
You're
the net
oil.
Number, I don't know how many, it's
exclusive
probably 400,000 or 500,000 barrels that have been, that 7 barrels you commented on earlier probably comes with several hundred barrels of gross fluid.
Mr. Owens, I was not assuming that the 68,000 was a mixture. I am prepared to take Mr. Stevens' word for it, but whenever you're estimating the gross amounts, you have to make sure you correct for the conditions, and one is to always gauge the actual amount of the oil rather than guessing it. With respect to the amount that was dispersed, we have found Exxon's estimates there to be consistently generous as far as what has happened to the oil. And frankly, it doesn't give me a great deal of comfort to just rely on dispersion, because that doesn't mean the oil has come out of the water or out of the shoreline. It just means it's distributed differently. And if it is going to have a toxic effect, it's hit something else. So the point is not to nitpick the number, but rather to say there's still plenty of oil on the shoreline and available to get into the water that we're worried about.
Congressman, If I could just make one comment on a term you used, which I'll beg your indulgence to differ with, and that was political desperation. I see no actions on our part since the early morning hours of March 24th that one could use to base what we have been doing on anything other than a sense of responsibility. I think that's been true right up through today, and I don't expect that's going to be any different in the future.
Well, nothing was done, as you know, Mr. President, for 3 or 4 days until Exxon took over. I mean, a piddling, disgusting effort for the first 3 or 4 days, even though Commissioner Kelso's office has compiled a chart which says that had your servant, Alyeska, been prepared to implement the contingency plan and had the equipment to do so, the weather cooperated very, very, very nicely, and you could have collected, under your contingency plan, in theory, the entire 260,000 barrel oil spill, and nothing happened. Then when Exxon took over, things began to happen, in part, I suggest, not just because of a sense of civic or other liability that you had or obligation that you had, but like Congress and like Alaska, everybody was responding to the anger of everyone else. And I think Exxon put its shoulder to the task and spent unlimited funds, some of which was wisely spent and some not. And I suggest that though the term of political panic or whatever it was that I suggested is not totally inappropriate, not just to you, but to all the rest of us who are trying to respond. I think that we have are now in the at the position of trying to review the effectiveness of what's been done, and I am trying to get to that. I was trying to get that point. I've used so much time, I'm probably not going to get to, as to try to get the Vice Admiral to evaluate or explain his comment earlier that we don't look at effectiveness. But it's now time, and we'll have time after September 15th and before you can get back in the spring, April 15th, obviously, to evaluate what is effective. And I, in my view, think that most of what you're now doing up there is ineffective, and there's got to be a better way. And in some areas, nature will do a better job than all of the rest of us put together. But I think we all responded to the political, you fellows are as political as we are, in my view. And that's not intended as being necessarily a compliment to either of us, frankly.
No comment.
Commissioner Kelso did not, and that didn't mean to impugn the chairman, who has been valiant in all this. Commissioner Kelso did not finish his answer, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I've fallen behind on a few points here, if I could quickly. I need to at least set a few things straight for the record.
I think it's rackable. Go ahead.
I think you only need 21 for racquetball, isn't it? I want to be really clear that we cannot imagine how Exxon concludes that 600 miles of shoreline has been treated. I'm not suggesting that they're being disingenuous. I'm just saying that in talking with the Coast Guard, and we rely on the Coast Guard figures, and our conclusions are the same as theirs, I think. The information outside of Prince William Sound is highly unreliable as far as what the treatment has been. And to conclude that there's somehow 600 miles, I think if that statement were made in Kodiak or Homer, the roof would rise because people just do not see that level of commitment in the area. Maybe they're looking at a different Gulf, but in the time I've been out in that Gulf, you do not see that level of effort.
Well, let me suggest something here. That you may be treading on a subject matter of a hearing of this committee in 1995 when we try to determine what was done and not done at the end of this process. You know, I'll go back to Exxon's documents, and I think I'll go back to my conversations with the governor of the state and with Admiral Robbins, and that is you have a problem in Prince William Sound and down the peninsula, and it's a problem that's got to be addressed and it's got to be cleaned up. And the test isn't whether or not 600 or 800 or 1,000 miles of beaches have been treated or not treated. The question is, at what point is this environment stabilized in such a fashion so that it no longer poses a threat to the uses to which it was being put to before the accident and the wreck of the Valdez? That's the test. And that is one of which the Coast Guard, in consultation with others, will be the arbiter of. And I hope recognizing the obligations of the state government to comply with its laws. And so we'll come back. Somebody will be doing an audit. Maybe it'll be this committee, or somebody will be auditing this on what happened, what didn't happen, because hopefully we will do that for the purposes of learning from this experience, because this is the grandest example we've had in the United States. And I think we're at a point now where the going's going to start getting real tough. You can't pick up thousands of barrels a day. You can't show ready examples of dirty versus clean. This thing is in gradients of good, bad, and worse, you know, back and forth. And my concern is, and it's the same concern I had in May, is that the Coast Guard, Admiral Lusk, fully understand the position of trust that they're in from the public. And that's really the gauge. I don't know many other federal agencies that have been thrust into a position of such high visibility and emotionalism as the Coast Guard currently is. Certainly not in peacetime, I don't know when that's happened. And this is an accident, this is an incident, which to me, and we'll go more into this later, but you know, as I said earlier, is a systems failure. And this is to me an environment that is comparable to the Challenger. It's comparable to Three Mile Island. And at some point, the Coast Guard's reputation is going to be right there on the line because of some difficult, tough calls that Admiral Robbins and Admiral Yost and you and others are going to have to make. But I think what is clear is that the Congress has clearly established, I think you heard it here, you heard it in the Senate the other day on a bipartisan basis, you're our negotiator. You're representing us, you're representing our constituents, you're representing the President of the United States. This isn't partisan, it's flat out on the table, and the question is the restoration of Prince William Sound and